Just remember two things. We already have applying for that week at the end of July to go up to Pretoria to sit there for a week and interact with the department on issues where you need more time, you know? I mean, like this example, they've got the seven dam reconciliation plans or river, those reports, and try and get into them. We can deal with some substantive issues around water and environment, not all these financial technical stuff. So we're planning for that, and you'll see on the program, I've indicated some of those that I really think. If there's any there that you think we need, please let me know soon, because I need to pull throughout that program. The second thing I've asked members is what specific oversight you would think we should be doing. Which oversight is kind of really burning and necessary. And I need some guidance there. The type of things I'm already wanting to look at is at people's databases. I want to see what databases we have. I think that's a vital issue, that we know what information we have and what information has veracity and credibility. Then, as you know, I've not been to Kruger Park and St. Lucia. And those are good places to do oversight. After they visited us this last week, they told us how important it was to go there. Apparently, the one place is building a hotel. We like to visit the hotel, it's a main problem. But the other one is St. Lucia, of course, has done real big changes. There's a whole debate about whether you open up the river mouth, but maybe it's worth us to get involved in some of this. In real life, to see how the environment works and how dams and water and things work, other than looking at the skies with the rain. So, I would want feedback as well soon, if you can, on what oversight you think we should be doing. So, we use those, I think it's 3 or 4 weeks of committee weeks before Parliament starts. You can then use that very usefully to get some things done that we have to get out of the way. So those are all the program issues. Anyone want to say anything about that? No? No? Fine. All right. Good morning to the entities that are here. Thank you for your preparation and everything else. At the moment, what we, of course, are concentrating on as a committee is oversight issues. Obviously, we want to sit in place process of oversight every year, which may mean that the entity will have to come here once or twice a year, at least once a year, but maybe more, so that we can interact on the kind of things that we need to have oversight on, which are particularly your strategic plan, your direction, where you're spending money, your priority areas of work, and then of course your financial statements. Very vital to see how you're spending the money and whether you're spending it well. And so, through your inputs, please concentrate on that. You can leave out thanking me and my granny and my mother and everyone else. You can leave out how old your organization is and how wonderful you've been in the past. And so on. You can leave out all that stuff. You can read that if it's necessary. I want you to really concentrate on. Trying to lift it. When you leave here, in my head, you must have the strategic plan clearly in my head. So it's up to you to let me. The better you make me understand your strategic plan, the better I can interact with your organization. When I say I, of course, I mean committee as well. So it's up to you to get that across to us. And then, of course, the other side of it, the accountability side, you need to really explain to us how you run your affairs, whether things are going well, if you've got qualified reports, all I can say, well, we owe you. And of course, the systems that you have in place, the databases, the kind of things that would be useful for us to use as a country, and that if you do have databases, explain to you what they are and so on. So those are the issues I want you to concentrate on. It's really kind of. Then, of course, we have the department here. As I've done with the environment, it's not necessary that the DG is here, and I've excused him. we have other senior officials from the department. How about you leading the team, man?
Yes,
you have enough money even last week, I hear now you're coming back. I'll just get the rest of the...
Thank you, Judith. It's great to be here. Thank you.
So far, you started off on a good foot. You said all the right things. It doesn't say it like that.
Let me just lodge a formal apology, Mr. Durham. Also, he's still in back in office, but not allowed to travel off.
I spoke to him. Thank you. Remember your department, all of you, it's awkward here as well. What I want is that you guys, all the tasks that we give you, make notes of them. I haven't received the one from last week yet, so I'm imagining you're kind of a typist because they're not typing it yet.
No, Chair, we did.
Sorry?
They have been submitted, Chair.
You submitted?
Yes.
Where? To who?
To your secretary.
My secretary?
Yes.
Hey, why is that? I think it's between you and Obama. Between the two of you, you're really... Okay, well, that's fine, as long as it's there. And we can see and keep a record of what needs to be done, okay? Alright, let's... welcome to the Water Research Council. I think we've had you once before, looking more at some of your substantive issues. Now we're, of course, shifting a bit of gears. I have also, just to say, I have received recently, and I will circulate it. That will be on the website. You received it, they've got it. You will see they sent us some reports. I think we circulated 2 or 3 days ago to you. It's some of the things I think we raised during the last hearing. So it's quite nice reports they've given us on water resource management, water link ecosystems, water use and waste management, water utilization and agriculture. That should not happen. I hope none of your phones are on. There's a water research company. I threatened to dump it in there. Oh, it's the president. Sorry, that's why I kept the phone on. I'm sorry. I'll take a call later, Mr. President. Yeah, the committee is very important to me. Please put your phone on silent at least. It's so important to have it on. All right. Water Research Council, over to you. Good day to all of you. You've heard the issue that I've asked you to concentrate on. So let's go ahead. The report looks like this. You got it? All of you got it? Okay.
I'm Janine Adams, I'm chairperson of the Water Research Commission, and on my left is Dr. Christopher, he's the CEO. On my right is the CFO, Mr. Marek Patel, and Ms. Wendy McSally is our PR person. So our presentation, which you've got in front of you, is just a short introduction, and then we'll go straight into financials and then into the strategic plan. That seems if we're giving too much detail, cut us off. We're not giving enough detail, we can provide that. Just to repeat, what is our mandate? We act according to the Water Research Act, number 34/1971. We promote, coordinate, cooperate, and communicate water research. We establish research needs and priorities and stimulate water research according to priorities. And one of our important jobs is the transfer of information and technology. And for today, in your handouts, we've included quite a lot of the policy and the technical brief, also the recent copy of the water wheel. So transfer of knowledge is a very important part as well. We enhance knowledge and capacity building, and we will speak about the number of students that have been trained on our various research projects that we fund. In terms of governance, it has been a good year. We have our corporate governance framework, and we have a board charter with our board code of ethics. Our committees of the board are functioning well. The audit committee oversees the external and the internal audit, and we have complied with the Water Research Act, the Public Finance Management Act, and then obviously Treasury regulations is something we also need to comply with. our key strategic areas, those are the areas where we strategically fund research. These have not changed over the last few years. They remain important. The sub-focus areas do change. So we fund water resource management, water linked ecosystems, water use and waste management, and water utilization in agriculture, those four main key strategic areas. And if we look
well,
at
when you come to that
yeah.
part, the area that you funded, what would be important to me is which ones were very successful and which ones failed. They didn't do it properly, they didn't perform properly, they didn't spend their money correctly. that's what I would want to know. Just, not just your finances, but the projects you fund, whether they are okay. So I don't need to know everyone, but the ones that were bad, like everyone else.
Yeah, we work on the deliverable system, so the researchers get paid on delivery, and that is how we monitor progress of different research projects.
When you're funding to finance,
when
you're funding. I just want to know which ones are.
Okay. This particular diagram just gives a breakdown of those four key strategic areas and how the funds are distributed. Water management is about 50% and water use the other 50%.
What you see is what plan and what yield, which actually gives you a feeling that there is not that much difference between the percentage that was planned for the area and what was used. So, you know, it may be that certain projects have been, you know, delayed in their performance, but overall we have a good situation as for each of those areas. Now, what happened is that research tends to create a situation where not always you can deliver on time, you know, from weather issues to researcher issues, and therefore we allow to amend the deliverables to allow, you know, for delayed delivery when required, which it requires a serious judgment. And in those cases, what our budgets allow on a yearly basis is some rollover of funds from year to year, because those projects are not yearly, those are 3 to 4 year projects, most of them. And we allow some rollover, which makes sense within the system. So basically, we allow around the between the 10 to the 15% that moves from year to year and try to get GDA. So individual projects very difficult to actually report to you. We're talking about 300 projects per annum. But we can talk overall about the area and say that overall those areas have achieved the majority of what they said to achieve.
Okay, so going on to this diagram, which shows the breakdown of new projects and finalized projects. At any one time, as the CEO had mentioned, there are about 300 odd projects on the go, and we finalize up to about 70 projects a year with the same number of new projects being added. So in 2010-2011, the total investment has been 110.7 million. In addition to that, which is the levy funding, we also get leverage funding from other organizations, and this amount is 13.8 million. And in total, just a breakdown of the projects that we funded, 328 in 2010 and 2011, 259 were active, 76 were finalized, and 77 were newly initiated. This is about the capacity of the water distribution that we can have. I think we're operating at maximum capacity. Okay, we continue to excel in supporting students. So as we said, one of our important parts of our mandate is training and capacity building. A lot of the research funding, it goes to students, particularly post-graduate students, with the training of their master's and doctoral studies. And so this diagram indicates how many students, 520 supported by WRC projects. And of course, an effort is also made to make sure that historically disadvantaged students are funded, and this is reported on in detail, and we can say that 60% were from disadvantaged backgrounds, the majority 261 black, 50 Indian colored. At the moment we also keep in statistics on the number of male and female students, and also trying to track students to see where they go afterwards. So that's some more detail on the project. Besides the actual report that gets printed, there's also these research briefs, and we've given you some of those. and there's knowledge sharing events. So a lot of workshops are meant to share information, technical workshops, and then also some workshops where we develop new project proposals. So to get people together with the same expertise, to get them working together in consortia. So some of the projects are big research needs of a number of different institutions. So some efforts put into that as well. Okay, just looking at human resources, I think we've done very well in terms of transformation. We now have 57% females in the organization, and we have 66% of our staff are black. So those statistics are doing well. Okay, over to our CEO, going to continue.
Before our financial assessment deals, we're stuck. We're very small. Because we are a funding agency, we are around 55 people. So what we're talking about is a very small human resource component of the total budget. One thing that I want to say is, you see, the human resource information, the project information, are all 2010-11. This is information that is part of the executive report submitted to the Auditor General, and I got permission to provide you with this information, but it's unaudited. But we didn't bring the financial, of course, of the current year, the 10-11. So what we have done is a combination of 3 years, you know what I mean, that goes over a few years back. We have given information at the project and what we achieved 10-11, and we have given the financial for 9-10. So, but if we give you a feel, I can say from where we stand now, we submitted on the 31st of May the financial statement to the Auditor General, as approved by our board, and it looks healthy. We don't have any major issues at this stage, but of course it is subject to audit, so we can only come back and tell you where we are as for our current year financial situation. But I will take it over to Mr. Patali, our CFO, and he will explain the 9-10 financial report.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. I'll bring this up on the report of the Auditor General, then the statement of financial position, which is previously known as the balance sheet, and the statement of financial performance, which was previously known as the income statement, and then the annual financial statement of our property company. If we go to the report of the Auditor General for 2009 and 10, we're pleased to advise that we had an unqualified audit report. The annual financial statements were prepared in terms of GRAP, which is a requirement. We however had one instance of matter relating to a prior year, which we have since fixed up. Mr. Chair, it related to the recognition of revenue in prior years, it was understated in the prior year, and we have in the 19 financial year rectified it, and the disclosures were made in the financial statement.
What does that mean?
Income was understated in 3 years ago.
How do you do that?
It was a substantial amount, Mr. Chair, but it was a revenue recognition issue, which we obviously...
You're using jargon, and I don't understand what's the revenue recognition issue. What does that mean?
It was an error in the financial statements.
But how does it happen? I mean, you know, you get a certain amount of money, you have to account for it. How did you undertake it? I mean, just tell me how the problem happened. You fixed it up. How does it happen?
I think it relates to reconciliations received from the three revenue sources. In that particular year, the reconciliation was changed between ourselves and the department, and then the only reports were just picked up much later. And then to rectify
it.
Statement of financial.
Do they do a performance audit of your stuff? Yes. Of the quality of the work?
If you then look at the balance sheet for 2019, once again, please be advised that we don't have any unfunded liabilities on the balance sheet. There was a marginal growth in the fixed investments due to the slow recovery of the financial markets. The increase in trade and other receivables were higher due to accruals that we had to make for the Department of Water Affairs and Ongeni Water Board. What normally happens is if we don't receive any amount at year end, we obviously accrue for it. So inevitably your cash will be lower, but your accounts receivable will be higher. And the minute the cash arrives in the new financial year, obviously we'll reduce the receivables and you'll see the impact in your cash balance. The cash position was much higher than the previous year, mainly due to lower payment of expenditure and higher accruals. The cash held at year-end was again in respect of commitment for multi-year research projects awarded, meaning that it was not free cash or cash that we could use for like any other purpose. Trade and other payables were higher due to higher accruals for research costs. What inevitably happens, Mr. Chair, in the month of March, with a lot of inquiries coming through, and we inevitably pay people on 30 days, and then we do the accrual and pay them in the new financial year. I think that's an accepted practice in the business model. There was an increase in the retirement benefit obligation, mainly due to higher medical cost inflation in respect of the post-retirement medical aid liability. Accruals, which are mainly for leave and bonus, were in terms of our approved HR policies. And once again, the ratio of current assets to current liabilities, in our view, was healthy. The ratio was 2.8 to 1. We then go to the statement of financial position, which refers previously to the income statement. We had an accounting deficit of 2.4 million. The deficit is mainly due to non-cash year-end accounting entries, specifically depreciation, provision, and actuarial valuations. One must also be mindful that the budget that we give to the minister is based on pure cash budget. Entry doesn't allow for these non-cash items. There was an increase in revenue of 8.6 million, which is mainly due to the water research levies, which we can from three various sources, mainly the department and the two water boards, RAND and Ongeni Water, and leveraged income. The water research levy is WRC's main source of revenue and it constitutes 23% of our total revenue. This levy is receivable in terms of the Water Research Act. Our operating expenses increased by 3%. This was mainly due to an increase in HR-related costs. If we then get to our annual financial statements for F7L6, which is effectively
you get bonuses?
Yes, we do.
Is that the 3% increase?
No, that was budgeted for.
How do you do these bonuses? All of you get it.
Not all of us get it, the people who actually get category A get
the
bonus. How many of those are there? Relatively high, we are a very small organization and we need to actually have good performers. But what's happening is that we have a bonus pool, and the more that get A, they get less. So basically, it is working on actually, you know.
Okay,
just
answer my question. I've asked how many. Simple question. How many of the 55?
Around 80% will get
and then you give each other bonuses.
The
answer is yes.
Are the bonuses going to the top management, or are the biggest percentage, this 80%, are they all the top management, or are there any of the workers that also get it?
All the workers, throughout. From the cleaner to
I want you to give me a report on it.
Okay.
I want to see exactly the categories of staff where the bonuses were given.
Page
It will give you an idea of what the costs that have gone through our books. It has a state of depreciation of 1.6 million in the WRP 2010. It's a non-cash item. The other costs, if I won't. And then the other 3 million would be included in our salaries, which is the movement on the post-retirement Medicaid liability. That would be included in the 33 million. It's basically that 3 million of the post-retirement medical aid and the 1.6 on the depreciation account for roughly 4.6 million of the deficit. And then obviously there will become much smaller amounts of contribute to the deficit as well. But those two, Mr. Chair, would be the biggest items that happen.
Right now, you said you made a comparison over 3 years. What is that? That was the 2010 one. What other comparisons did you make?
No, I said I get some, we gave you material about 9-10 is for financial. We gave you extra text about projects which is unaudited for 10-11 because we can't give you the financial at that stage. It's unaudited.
Where is that information?
It's audited anyway.
You gave it to us, but
I'm asking
where it is.
We gave you 9-10 export financial statement. This is the annual report. We then asked permission from the Auditor General to give you some material that hasn't been audited for 10-11. We cannot give you the financial.
I'm asking where is it? You're not listening. That's the third question I've asked you. Where is that information? You said you gave it. Where is it? Which part of it is? What is it? It's a simple question. You're saying you asked the Auditor General to give it to us. You say you gave it to us. I'm saying, where is it? I want to look at it.
It's in the presentation, and this is page 10-11, so it is in your text from page 3-4-5. Those are, basic project numbers and things like this that are given to you.
Pages 3, 4, and 5?
Yes. What we try to do, and this has been, you know, an ongoing challenge, is actually linking what is required as for the water cycles with the knowledge cycle. In the knowledge cycle, you know, I would say the easy part is to create the knowledge. To actually see that that knowledge is put in a way that is relevant and actually transferring has been, you know, much more difficult, and we're sitting with the challenge of a very dynamic sector that we need to address.
Do you have a database?
Yes, we have what we call the Power System, and we have database of all projects. So what we gave you before is a snapshot of all the projects. But on the website and on the fund management, you can see all the projects run. You can see all the students. You can see the gender of the students. And you, all this information is available to the public.
When I'm in a database, I'm more talking about the information that you gain from the research.
Yes.
So that's good to have that part. But I'm trying to think, like, if you say you do one of these research checks, how much water there is in the Kalahari, do you put that information on the database? So the research has been done. If there is data generated out of it, do we have a basis, database?
I think this is a distinction between data and information. We provide information. We are not a data bank because research is not about continuous surveying. Research is about actually studying an area. The Institute for Water Quality Study will have database. You know, it's an institute that belongs to the Department of Water Affairs. There is also data banks sitting at the NRF, which are addressing various areas. Whenever we have data that is linked to research projects, it is linked to the research project, is unavailable. It's kept within the university and it's kept within the database that it's linked to. Now, there are databases that we are connected to, and the Department of Science and Technology currently working on the research information management system, the DREAM, the management of data, which we are part and parcel of this initiative, trying to support the data that's made available from our research is available into this database. You know, there are.
Do you need the names of all these databases you link to and you don't have?
I think, you know, in the department.
Give me
the
name.
I'm trying to find out what's the name.
Is the Institute of
The NRM. There is the Institute of Water Quality Study, which belongs to the Department of Water. The National Research Foundation runs a number of databases, and they are linked to the marine, so there is the marine oceanographic data, marine environment issues, and various other, you know, information comes through various satellites and other activities. It's a very, very good database that they are running because they cleaned the data before. It can be used for secondary analysis of research.
Can I ask the department to help us? I need a one-pager where you explain to me all the credible data resources that exist in the area of water. That we've got a base understanding of where we get. And what kind of information on that data? If it's just marine information, then we know that. If it's water usage in metropolitan areas, then we've got that. So I want you to give me a one-pager from the department explaining which databases do we use and what is on them, okay?
What we do is we will develop technologies to collect data. And we will verify the latest, you know, GIS and the latest, you know, modeling that allow, you know, to measure quantity and quality, but we don't do the routine measurement. all the time. We basically aim to look at methodology for collecting data and accurate data and real-time data. So that's basically our aim. Basically, when we do what we do and we fund with an aim to actually see that this knowledge will relate to effective governance. And of course, it is a chain, it's a value chain, knowledge value chain. We are not making the policy or the strategy and practices, but we try to provide the information for this. We try to build competency for skill development, both from point of capacity building for new generation of water researchers, but also capacity building to allow the sector to function. Then knowledge is a source for improvement, appropriate technology and practices. We have very good processes that's developed in the country and very good technologies. And globally, we are considered to be, you know, not far from modern, you know, world. From point of appropriate technology, we are also very well developed. And we also provide, through the project, the ability to do situation analysis, to monitor progress against policy, monitor progress against, you know, whatever we send in the country. So basically, this methodology will allow you to do the situation analysis. Now, for 2011-12, a number of things informed the strategy. Of course, board overall direction and discussion with the board created, you know, the approval of where we're moving. A lot of discussion with the Department of Water Affairs in various stages and different directorates, talking with university, talking globally to where technology is moving, talking to the Department of Science and Technology, and also the areas that are linked to water, you know, bigger users in agriculture, discussing issues with the environment and water cannot be separated. So there have been a lot of talks and a lot we've done a stakeholder survey looking in their opinion about how to transfer knowledge also. But we have done another interesting exercise that I thought I would just mention here. And we have used a lady by the name of Chantelle Ilbury, which is the founder. And she runs a scenario exercise in which we actually looked and say, what happens to an organization like ours from point of knowledge, uptake and knowledge creation? And scenarios are based on something called uncertainty, because if it's certain, why you build scenario? And the difference from scenario to a forecast is that scenario says there will be weather, but not say it will rain or not rain. So you need to understand that there might be different situations, and you need to build a strategy to fit into them. What we actually came is two areas of uncertainty, you know. One of them is the whole notion of creation of new knowledge, which is relevant, and the other one is the application of that knowledge in the country. And that's basically our state. And it goes from high to low, and basically we say what we wish to be, and we call them all kind of, you know, nice names, and we wish to be in a scenario called Pula, where, you know, it's, you know, a good situation where there is both high creation is good and the uptake is very, very good. So we basically, from current reality, which probably will be not to say yet Pula, but somewhere between the Pula and the Mutambo, we are wishing to actually get into the Pula. So our strategy of doing that has to do a lot with dealing with uptake of knowledge, and at the same time, watching that we provide leadership for the creation of appropriate new knowledge. So we link very closely, you know, to that, to also the government outcome, and we special emphasis we put on outcome 10, which addresses the protection and management of the country's environmental assets and national resources, and we basically support the enhancement of quality and quantity of water through our research. And we will continue to address reduction of water loss and of distribution system, use and prevention of country groundwater, very important to actually address that. It's unaccounted for in a way, resource that we can actually use better. The whole notion of climate change from adaptation to mitigation has been addressed and continues to be addressed, and we are very strongly linking all those fields with government. So we're hand in hand with government as for the various issues. Biodiversity issues is another key issue for point of sustainability. We are very strong in addressing the whole field of wetlands, working with the Department of Environmental Affairs, and we actually have been representing the department on the Ramsar Committee, the Technical Committee of runs down. And ecosystem services is an important thing for providing a clean water to the catchment management. Another outcome.
Don't do any research or into kind of the best technology. For example, the Department of Water Affairs underwent a project somewhere in the north part of the country, and they used pipes, which were completely inadequate, and I think we had to pay 200 million rand to use different pipes. So do we do that kind of research as well? What is in the world, what is the best technology to use?
Yes, pipe material distribution system, there is enough material available to WRP for this. Quite a lot, yes. We will not go and check on the department's material, you know, in a way, you know. We do have, you know, from time to time projects that we look at situation on another day. We will report back to the department. For example, three basic water. For the strategy that was implemented, we went there and said, in three ways, make water water. Where is it not working? Why is it not working? When it's not working? So this kind of element, we do actually run research like this. It's a very interesting thing, all the government outcomes, because we sit in a position at science council where we support our country. If you look at the last one, it says, the implementation of technology we support targets. And they started from 74 to 90, and from 45 to 65 for point of improved sanitation. The presidency has now asked HSRC to check those numbers. HSRC comes to us and says, are those numbers okay? So you see, this is the outcome, trying to work towards the outcome. But as a learner organization, you also sit and have to actually ask component researcher, are those really the right, you know, number, you know, in a way. In a way, it's a paradox, but in a way, it's actually a very good position to have the community in the country to ask those things. So overall, in component of outcome 7, which relates to agriculture, now we're talking about agriculture being the bigger user, so we need to put a lot of effort to try and understand users in agriculture and understand how to actually utilize water in the best way, you know, more profitable, more nutritional food for people, more understanding how rural area can actually be improved. We're also looking at sanitation. We just launched together with the CSR a toilet demonstration center. This is what they call non-working toilets. You can't use them, but you can clean out the wear. And then all the range of technology from flush toilet to urine diversion toilet. It's a beautiful center, you know. And it actually allows people to come and learn. There will be training courses there for actually understanding sanitation. Outcome 9 aims at the establishing of responsive, accounting, and effective
efficiency. Where is that
from? CSIR in Pretoria. So you welcome when you come for that week to Pretoria, you welcome, we will take you there, you know, it's a beautiful center. And what happened is that various people from local government to people in various commercials in the manufacturer that actually made available free of charge, you know,
the structure. Put that on our list, okay?
CSIR Center for Soil. Okay, the Center for Sanitation, it's run by CSR Built Environment. Okay, from point of
view. A whole lot of names in my head, but okay.
Sorry about it. Okay. We're trying to improve basic services. We're trying to actually understand all the delivery of water and sanitation. And in there, you know, I'm saying, you know, the things that we are involved in, you know, locally in Africa can be fascinating. A few weeks ago, I've been to a workshop where 80 people arrived, mainly from the Ministry of Women and Disabilities, and it was all about hygiene practices and women periods and all those elements that people don't want to talk I thought nobody would come to the workshop, but everything was fixed up, you know, which was unbelievable, you know. So those are issues that never been there before, you know, that we are actually putting into the front. From point of local government, we work closely with Salga, but we work with several municipalities also. And we have been working hand in hand with the Greenie for many, many years. The Greenie has been done a lot of work on sanitation and various modes of sanitation. And recently we also actually tried and get funding from the Bill Gates Foundation for sanitation. They are very interested in this and supporting various initiatives in Southern Africa, not specifically only South Africa. The old notion of being relaxed together with South Africa benchmarking for a program that tries to actually look into local government, and a lot of work that you see now, like the Blue Report, emanated initially, you know, from research done by the WRC, and I think the award that the department has got from point of the database on related to water quality also emanates from research done by the WRC. WC aims to support outcome 6 also, which has to do with economic infrastructure network and trying to support water availability, addressing issues that relate to bulk water supply, the whole notion of appropriate regulation to do with quantity and quality, and try and understand the pricing strategy. And I sit next to my colleague, which we work very closely to, on, you know, Mohammed Bada, on pricing strategy. And in addition, we will continue to address unaccounted for water licenses, the old water allocation reform, and the establishment of the water economic regulator. So overall, what we try to combat is to look into water scarcity, poverty, and productivity, take the knowledge and move it to technology and policy, and we try to measure impact, and we do impact studies on our research, trying to say, this research made a difference as for the economic situation, social issues, health of the population, you know. Recently heard about the E. coli in Europe, you know, in a way we try to actually avoid cholera epidemics due to water or salmonella epidemics. And the whole notion of deteriorating environment and its link to water. So this is our mission and vision. Every year we actually test it. Okay, not a problem. And this is basically what we do. From now on, Chairperson, we have details. So you can stop me wherever you want because it's there on paper. This is saying to you what we will do in the next 3 years. So what you see here is water resource management will have rebuilt the portfolio of research onto track and program, and we put it when we call for proposal. May is when you call for proposal. The proposal goes through a cycle. So two kinds of call for proposal happen. One is to say, this is the area of water resource management. That amount of money will be put against water resource assessment and development, that about impact on water resources due to climate change and so on. And we explain to the public what this is all about. And then we have another kind of proposal where we say, we need research on small farmers or, you know, better utilization of technology for sanitation. And we actually detect to them, again, what we need in a greater detail. We call it solicitation research. We have about 109,000 of such solicitation research. So the sector actually responds very well to the direct call. What we try to balance is innovation and the need of the country where there is no professors or nobody that addresses it. So we try to build those balances. So those are the areas in very, very, you know, sort of like greater terms where we are going to invest in the future to a lesser or greater extent of funds in a way. But statistically, we put 50% of the funds in the first 2, which has to do with the resource, and 50% in the use of water. So the various users get 50% of the funds, and the watering ecosystem and water resource management get into the further. We try to tell you in water resource management, what's the aim of this area? That area supports the National Water Act.
clearly supports policy development, assessment, and tools that will allow the country to manage its water resource management. So basically, it looks at various national initiatives, it looks at providing a platform, it looks at building capacity, and encourage, you know, joint projects. Now, and that's more details of the various, I wouldn't go through the detail of the program, but you see the water resource assessment and planning. And this is a key area in the Department of Water Affairs. Water quality and management, again, parallel, and we work very closely with the various people. Resource protection, water resource and climate. So the OECD tool, the climate change risk and vulnerability, integrated flood and drought and related, all those adaptation studies. We've done a lot of modeling. We have done a lot of elements of trying to look in a larger sense of everything going to the local level now. And water resources institute in Alorenco, the old notion of assessment management, the reform, the regulation, the pricing, transboundary issues, and future scenarios, you know, we just completed the study on future scenarios from point of the landscape of institutional arrangement. And this is telling you what kind of future we have, and you know, that will take hours. I'm not going to go into all of them, you know, but for example, you know, quantification of water use in South Africa is about building better tools to do quantification. The whole notion of sediments and sediment movement is an important thing that we try not to neglect. Innovative approach to pollution, so the forensic of water, you know, is a new notion also. Water link ecosystem is about the link between the water environment and water reserves, and it's very important to understand the ecological processes. So what you will have here is a three main program. One is the understanding of the processes, then the management and the rehabilitation. A lot of money goes into rehabilitation, especially when we talk about river and when we talk about flipping. I was very glad to see in the news that the river health program is alive and moving, and Adopt a River is moving, you know, and that's good. I think it was Buffalo City that is moving on. It's actually quite nice to hear that it's still alive. This started with the research program, and it's a good success of transferring the research into actually, you know, management tools that are active. So that's another area. It's a smaller area, but when you look at it, what you will see is, you will see fish health, the old notion of riparian vegetation, the old notion of what is the influence of rain drop on our aquatic environment, for example, in the long run. We're putting a lot of emphasis on to healthy urban rivers, because that's an important thing to rehabilitate also. And the old notion of alien fish, we have been researching it, but it's very important because they overtake our own species. This is a very big area of research. It looks at quality and assurance of supply, and it looks at the domestic, both urban and rural and very urban too. It looks at mining, and it looks at the...
Is that the blue and the green drop?
It will fall within this.
So who does the blue and the green drop? Who pulls it together?
Yes.
And you provide the information?
We provide food. We don't provide information. The information is actually done by the government.
By the government?
Yes,
it's
actually
doing
it. The initial tool.
So they all have consultants. Okay,
we are not consultants, so we can't do that.
Okay, I'm just joking.
So basically, here is a huge kind of portfolio. The idea is to look into water services and institutional management at local government level, understand water supply treatment technology and municipal wastewater and sanitation, look at sustainable and integrated industrial management, so we work with the industry. We have put a lot of effort because we have the current takeout. We have the public enterprise that we put money into research and water. So we have an MOU with EFCO, and we have a committee that looks into R&D together with EFCO.
and we have now in the last stages of signing an agreement with Gazprom. Castrol is a fantastic laboratory. They are willing to provide it for research for other universities, and they also doing great, you know, component industrial excellence research. They're doing really very good research, so we work very closely with them. I must say in the previous area that I showed, in addition to working with the Department of Water Affairs, we also work very closely from point of environmental issues with CIOM, and we work with a number of other bodies that have to do with the environment and ecosystem, ready for water, ready for wetlands and other activities that are linked to it. And I think we are also from point of planning and policy, are in the process of signing an MOU with PCCA, who they are here today. So knowledge sharing between us and PCCA have been discussed. We work very closely also in this area with DBSA, the Development Bank of South Africa. So we try to actually coordinate and see where we actually, those bodies we do not fund, but we actually work together with them. So research in that area is again wide. We started having climate change as fair use. So we initially looked at climate change in general, but we are looking at industrial carbon footprint and minimizing carbon energy component of water supply. We actually started to work more and more in energy and water. And this is another issue to do with desalination, because one of the main issues in desalination is the cost of energy that's required. We did some studies on micro hydropower, and we will extend it from point of energy efficiency, and we're talking about not pipe water supply, but we try to actually leapfrog into new technologies. There's a lot of work on acid mine, but the way we will go into acid mine now is more technologically, because apparently there are bugs that you can put in the water and they will not create an acidic formation. So you can prevent acid mine with positive methods. So this is
we're
one.
We're starting the hearings on the 21st. I would like to
We will be there. We will be there. We have been previously.
Tuesday, Wednesday, and the next Tuesday.
This is,
I think we need to get the kind of research information you offer. Okay, just one or two people of the
okay. We are part of the intergovernmental group for the task.
Oh, well, then you probably will be
okay,
part of
so
the delegation.
We are trying to also change the outlook and try and see how wastewater is developed, not like wastewater, but rather a beneficiary resource. And for that we actually tie to various technologies from point of waste treatment. And we have actually done, together with FFWD, looking into urine diversion requirements, improving urine diversion from point of its applicability. But there are a number of various activities around here from point of technology and from point of management and energy. Last field is agriculture. We separated agriculture from the rest of the use because it's a larger user. It also used both rain fed and irrigated land, which is different to using potable water. And the aim is basically to improve food security and livelihoods of people dependent on agriculture. And those are the areas from food and fiber included, timber production in agriculture, and the whole notion of poverty reduction, because the poorer people sit in, it doesn't mean they are agrarian, but they're sitting in rural land. And the whole notion of agriculture can also be a major source of contamination, so we also look into protection. So future research there, actually, we look at the quantification. We want to try and say that we can, in real time, give accurate data as for how much the farmer is using. We have developed the water administrative system, but we want to go into GIS and actually get real time remote sensing for point of quantification. Very important for us to see that food should be nutritious, not especially for kids. Gender issues and agriculture are major issues, where women and rural women especially stand. The old food value chain is rested in irrigated agriculture, and also the attention to climate change, because agriculture as a land use
and what are the effects of climate change needs to be further addressed. And then there is the crop and grassland system for renewable energy. What ever comes from our research is available to the public in various formats. We have given you the brief. We actually have demonstration spaces. We have exhibited conferences. We do workshops. We have a scientific journal called Water and Air, which has quite a good impact, you know, compared to other scientific journals. And we have the Water Wheel, which actually takes research into the public. Then we have the run-of-the-mill report, and we have also the what we call technology transfer report. We also encourage the universities and other scientists to fund. So in addition to actually having the report, this information is also published in scientific and journals.
Why don't we receive copies of
framework in terms of the research that you do gets influenced by smaller players. I mean, I see a lot of this research is kind of directed at government, and it's directed at local government and at big water users. And one of your big programs, you say, is around smallholder farming, things like that. Because, for instance, I'm involved in a group that's doing lemongrass farming up in the Eastern Cape, and they're having a whole bunch of problems and slowly working through that. But, I mean, would they be able to, for instance, send you a request to say, you know, this is the kind of project that we're working on. Have you got any information that you've done around this kind of small-scale farming? Can you do that research for us? These are the kinds of problems we're picking up. I mean, are you open to those kinds of inputs? And how open are you, how accessible are you in terms of making that known to small-scale farmers? Because I think often they don't know that. The other thing that I just wanted to find out was that, I mean, do you do specific research? A lot of what I've seen, just looking through it, seems to be kind of overall picture stuff, so it's kind of like, you know, sewage plants in South Africa more generally, things like that. But would you do a request for instance, the Treetane Committed Project in Cape Town, which is looking at using springs from Table Mountain and integrating them into the water system for Cape Town? Would you, for instance, find such research like that, and would they be able to put proposals through to you as a kind of unsolicited bid, and what the procedures are around that?
Thank you very much for the presentation. My question is similar, but it's not completely. What are the drivers of what gets studied? What gets basically money to be studied?
So, I mean, can you talk us through? I mean, who is putting ideas into the system? And then how do you obviously determine what gets funded or not, or what not? To what extent are the bids solicited, and to what extent are the bids unsolicited? And then how would people obviously then put into the system, you know, you would like this done or that done? Then my next question, Chen, is might be a question that the department has to ask. On the levy which is your dominant income scheme, now it's the department's on. How effectively is this levy actually being collected? If I'm not mistaken, it's the levy placed on municipalities, there might be other ones as well. So taking into account the problems that many municipalities have in paying for the water that they buy, whether directly from the department or from water boards, is this levy being effectively collected? And I guess what I'm saying is, considering how large those debts are, could the Water Research Commission actually be more highly funded if there was a higher collection of levies? I mean, I'm making an assumption, that you don't collect all the levies, but it's not something which we've ever discussed in the committee before. I'm really interested to hear that question. Then, the Minister, and I understand these kind of questions are difficult, because they essentially are political questions. The Minister of Science and Technology spent in her budget speech last year, or week before, to get in the point, that she would like all research institutions under her department. Now, I don't have a particular opinion either way. I think it's functioning well under the oversight of the Minister of Water and Environmental Affairs. We certainly don't drive it from my side. Is this a discussion that you are having, have had? Are you able to, I mean, I know you're political, but as I said, the ministers are often neither kind of thing. Do you have an opinion on it? Are there any benefits or downsides to it? And perhaps the department would like to comment on that as well. Are there really any synergies to be gained by putting the institution under another department? Which is what the Minister of Science and Technology alluded to. then I got on his desk.
Regarding for your financial statement, your operating cost for the big amount that is your research and the development cost is the cost of 106 million. But you have got this financial statement. I didn't see that your breakdown for how you spend this 106 million. I haven't got a detail for where you get the 106 million comes from. Because your revenue, I see the all the revenue, where you came from, the income. But you use operating this cost. How you spend this money for 106 million? I think this you haven't got a breakdown for this. And I think there is another thing is for your bonus. I think there is Jefferson already angry. But he can't believe 80% performance for get a bonus for your researcher. But from the your detail inside, I see that your different payment salary level. Even like the contract people, is Mr. Faroy. He hasn't got a bonus because his level is I think is also quite high because but he is a contract. He gets I think how much he gets for the salary. He gets about 660,000. He's also high salary. He's near for the level 12 or level 13. Okay. But if from the CEO your performance, because you say your salary is 1.3 million. So you highlight your performance is percentage 16%. So you get 110,000 for your bonus amount paid. But if from 16%, your bonus must be 200,000, not the 119,000. I don't know how you can calculate this percentage. And also your percentage is the amount the pay for the about the for the this cattle grade AMMS. So this one, how you can analyze for 10.8%, 6.56%, 7.9%. How do you make this sense for the who pay the 10.8%? Who pay for the 6%? How you can categorize? Because you say MMS, for this one I can't see. Then some the high payment of people haven't got a bonus. but you highlight, because 80% people take the corner, but there is a high income, this gentleman, this Paloli, why you haven't got the corner?
The other thing that worries me a little bit is about your, I understand the dividing it into four categories, and then, you know, the one is the two that were explained 50%. But I was wondering why we don't, you see, I mean, I'm a bit worried that that is a hidden myth situation. Well, you've got a whole list of things, and someone may research something, and someone may not give a bid to research something, you may not have enough money in that area to give the money. I'm quite interested to know why we don't concentrate at least some of our research on one or two major priorities that we've identified. Whatever they may be, let's say desalination and asset mining, that they are such important that we don't just wait for bids today. We actually go and find people that are good and they can do the research, and etc. You know what I'm trying to say? I'm trying to see that it just seems to me that a percentage of the budget should really be focused on absolute priorities where we need answers. And as I say, those have to really be one or two or three, maybe. Is there any thought being given to that kind of process? So that we avoid a situation where, you know, you have a whole list of stuff, and there's 50% of the money available, but in that 50 there's a further delineation, maybe a very important research that we're just not being able to fund because of the way it's cut the pie, already up front it's cut the pie, instead of concentrating on it. I would like to know about what your views on that. Okay, those are the questions.
The answer is simply what for both of them, yes. We actually open for small farmers to come to us. We are open for small farmers to come to us and discuss, and we can do two of two different things. We can actually refer them to research that is already available and say to them, that will solve your problem. We can refer them to an expert in the field also. But if it is a very unique issue, but at the same time can provide life to others, we can actually help them to go through what we call short-term research agreement, which is small but very focused, and we can provide them, you know, for some funds to do, you know, a small piece of research. It can actually build a seed fund for bigger research in the area if required. We do have localized, component of, an area. So, for example, there are research that has to do with the Cameroon. There are research that has to do with Cape Town, atmospheres, or Dagon Mountain, years of research. So the unique area and unique things for certain area have been researched, when it is a specific problem and a specific solution, that we will not do an engineering consulting kind of thing, but research, we will do for sure. So it's yes to both your questions and be open for this. What gets studied and how we go about it? It requires actually a lot of work throughout the year to come to the point in which when we call for proposals, and that actually has to do with talking to many stakeholders, talking to the department, not only to the department, trying to hear what was done, looking also the trend overall, because you need to link between where are technology going and what are promising and all that together. And the people we employ are not bankers, they are experts in the field. So I expect the research manager to really understand the field, to be part and parcel of the whole thing, to actually be able to judge. But we don't actually allow them to judge, because we have different powers. For the last 10 years, we have built a new process for funding. So we call for proposal and we tell the people, those are the key issues, for what the country needs. And we then
wait for what will come. Once it comes, it goes through a review. All proposals go to either end users, you know, or people that are, you know, scientifically and technically good in their field, and we get 5 reviewers for each proposal, and that comes back, and that gets consolidated, and then that's put together internally through 2 other, you know, task teams, and then approved, you know. So all, the whole thing actually goes through a due process as to what will come now. Term of preference, and that's actually part of the chair question. Term of preference has to do where we either don't see anybody responding to an area or actually coming with an idea, or where we actually put group of people together and say, you know, this is a problem in the country, let's think how we can solve the problem. Then we put a term of preference for solicited research. Now, how much, well, currently, those are much bigger projects, and in many cases, those projects are not one research institute. Water cannot be solved normally with one discipline. Problems with water require a number of disciplines, so you will see a number of universities that are good in different areas, or actually a link between universities and research councils that work together. And when we call for those things, we actually also provide more or less how much will be funded for that area, and then it also goes for review. So it initially goes for review as a term of reference, and then it goes for review when the application for the term of reference are coming in. It will differ. You see, what happens is we don't want to stifle also innovation. So we maybe for a year will call for term of reference in a certain field, but we will then actually after a while open it to allow some innovation in the area that will come, because when people actually don't have the constraint, they think, you know, out of the box sometimes, and we do listen to our researcher also. They come with sometimes with very good ideas where we are actually, you know, listening to them. So that's basically the range of how we go about it. Levy, I should let government answer. We have our own views, but we have to open it and say something, but it's basically government.
Okay, Mr. Muller asked me to allocate that question to me. What happens is that the Water Research Commission put a proposal of what it is going to be, and this year they've put in a proposal of 10%. We are considering about a 7 or 5% increase. The current levy is about 4 cents per cubic meter, and it was that's the basic machine. And this is charged on the raw water, it's not charged on the municipal water meter. And then transfer the money from the trading account to the Water and Research Commission on a periodic basis based on the budget. So we look at the budget, and approximately 100 million rand is transferred to the Water Research Council based on about 4 cents per cubic meter, and that is charged to you on the raw water charge.
Can I just add to what Mohammed has said? I think what Mr. Morgan was aiming at, if there's problems in the billing of the trading entity, that will also affect, of course, the income.
No, I mean, we just transfer a fixed amount, so despite the fact that we recover it or not, if we can get it.
But you do it on the raw.
That is correct.
But you don't always collect the money.
Yes, that is correct.
You don't always collect the money, but you pay the levy, or do you don't pay the levy on
We pay them the levy, so they have their budget.
So whatever raw water you give, you took 4 cents a cubic, and you pay whatever that is.
That is correct. You pay on inward.
So you said with a problem, you don't collect.
That is correct.
I want to add, actually, many and many pay as experts. You know, they pay for themselves to borrow water, so it's not a number that they
get a big chunk of it.
Yes, so they actually, as they actually sell, they pay. We also have an arrangement for different payments. They pay, like, I think every 6 months, while the department pays monthly, which allows for cash flow, because otherwise we wouldn't have cash flow. We had periods that we didn't get paid. We had problems with cash flow, but I think currently the situation is very good. We also pay the department a fee, a percentage for collecting, so it's not...
So it's not for free, like
that? Not for free.
You created this impression that you were the good, do-gooder. They pay for you to collect it.
And if it's estimated and there is a reconciliation at here and there for the amount that's actually paid for.
Okay, I mean, I think I understand what's happening. It also reinforces the need, of course, to get the water trading entity working properly again, which you know, Chair, is not happening. Because you, as the trading entity or the partners, I mean, I guess the trading entity, also periodically write off of water that is, of money that is never collected, or whatever user. So, in that case, your good payers are, in a percentage term, contributing the highest percentage to the water redistribution. Now, there's a fairness issue there, of course, as well. And so, basically, if the system worked properly, it would be entirely fair. Everyone would contribute to the water redistribution on the cubic meter used. The system is not fair at the moment because the water trading entity is not collecting money from everyone, and because its own data is unreliable, quite frankly. So, I mean, you know, you guys pay in good faith because the good people across the table have to keep their doors open, and that's fine, I guess I agree with that. But what certainly is also, I mean, I know that they've the WRC put in some kind of...
I didn't tell you why he's saying it. I thought they said it doesn't matter whether people default for that.
So they get things that rock amount of money. They ask for 100 million rand. I'm simplifying. You ask for 100 million rand? Okay, but no one ever gets what they particularly want. The point is, you might ask for 100 million rand, they might give you 90 million rand. My argument is, well, if everyone pays for the water, you may very well get your 100 million rand. That's the point I'm making. Chair, can we tell you what that?
There'll be more money there for you.
There are huge amounts of debt which is written off in the water trading entity because it's not connected. Some of it is from users that don't exist and are bold, and some of it is from users who don't pay and are missing, and all sorts of other. We've gone through that those recommendations. What I'm saying is that because the money comes from effectively from the trading entity, it could conceivably be a lot more, and the water commission, the WRC, should be getting more money. You see, the other thing which is interesting, Chair, is surely this is predictable. In the sense that there is a tariff per cubic meter, and that it should be somewhat non-negotiable, that if X amount of water is sold, the WRC should get that amount. Now, if our granted, you know, if water sales drop, not that they're going to, there would be a problem there. But why is it, I can see how you have oversight over the tariff, but I would think that with absolute knowledge of what is being sold, that is what they should be getting. Are they in fact getting the percent, the tariff for every cubic meter sold in raw water? Or are you building into that the fact that you are not collecting all revenue from the water?
It's broken down to a cubic meter, chart per cubic meter. But what we look at is what their budget operations and cost is going to be, and we try and ensure that is covered, and that is always covered. So we have a budget. They have an income that is equal to the budget, and we ensure that money that is that the approved budget is transferred to them. So they can't, in terms of the TFMA, the Section 3A company, they can't accumulate surplus, but the CFO would say that the budget for break even.
and we ensure that they have sufficient money to oil their wheels and do the research they're supposed to do.
That's not possible. Yeah. And I accept that they can't make a profit. But there's nothing wrong with them having a bigger budget, of which they will happily tell us they will spend.
Mm-hmm.
I have no doubt. Mm-hmm. Give you more money, you'll spend more money. There's no you turn down the phone books every day.
Mm-hmm.
That surely is a problem. Mm-hmm. The question I'm asking is every cubic meter of raw water sold by the department, if you time that by the tariff, which you agree on, is it going to the department? Is it going to the WRC?
Yes, in theory, that's what should happen, and I think that is what is happening. Can you come in?
Quite frankly, I don't think that's really happening yet. I think because the two other water boards do audit statements as to what they've collected, and the tariff is applied to the volume. And I think, without being too critical, I think because the department might have challenges in that regard, I would imagine they're paying up estimates from year to year. And we don't see substantial growth in their income from their portion of the levy from year to year. Whereas the Romanian rand, you see the 5-6% coming across, and if not more with the volume, some years it's actually more than the tariff increase. So if there is a shortfall, every year there's about, I mean, let's say there's a 2.5 million shortfall between what the budget is and what we receive. And that could be attributed to them probably not having the volume, in my view. And hence they can't. So it's estimate driven basically from the department.
But it's based on the problems that, I mean, the general problems we have within the state of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What
is the law, sir?
They don't say they should collect and we should pay them if the census
collects. I don't know exactly what are the someone with the lawyer?
I don't know the exact, but I remember you say that they don't have the census. When the levy was agreed upon with the
before
my
time,
but the department
was today. I'm not sure which part, Chair, the part of the
one that's dealing with tariffs.
The levying of rates and charges.
Yeah.
It says here, notwithstanding anything contained in any law, the minister may, in consultation with the Minister of Finance from time to time by notice to the Gazette, levy rate on land which may be irrigated by means of water supply or made available by the state of irrigation board or a water board, levy charges on water supply or made available for use for agricultural purposes, urban purposes, industrial purposes or any other purpose by the an irrigation board, the water board, the local authority, the rainwater board, or any other body, or levy both such rates and such charges as made. Yeah, it's not
terribly good. It's not very specific. It's a description of how much of that. So, what you're saying, that you look at the budget basically and you try and make sure that the budget works. So whatever weaknesses there are in the system isn't compliant with what the law says. And then it's a question, the next question that is asked is the one that Mr. Morgan asked, and then you may have to ask, do we need more or less money for this entity, and then that is different. Maybe need one way or the other.
Right, what was any other question that was asked? The other question was about the Ministry of Science and Technology and all research institutes being seen to be reported to Science Commission. We never did. Other science institutions reported to the Ministry of Science, and there was a parliamentary grant that was given. The Department of Science and Technology chose at one stage to only keep three institutes, an HSRC, CSIR, and the NLS. However, the WRC was never part of the oil equation. And funding of research in the country is very interesting because some of it is non-sectorial and some of it is sectorial.
So what they actually did, they gave all the sector back to the mother department. So ARC goes to the Department of Agriculture and MRC to the Department of Health and so on, you know. And of course, you know, there is a different understanding of science and technology at different departments. We create within the Science Council, you know, some sort of tension while the Department of Science and Technology understand where they fit. And there is also a kind of a feeling that maybe we can increase the science force by actually having, you know, a one umbrella. We are very unique to the old system because we are the only one that never lives on the science force but on the levy.
Yeah.
So you see, that's very also controversial because all other science councils get money from the science board from parliamentary grants. The other thing is that what's unique about us and that's quite interesting is that in the state, the country decided in the National System of Innovation to separate funding from research. So basically the FRD, which was part of the CSR, became the NRF together with the arms of funding of other organizations. So they said, no, there will be funding body and there will be institutions that will do research. We are a funding body. So within that umbrella, the only closest organization we are is the NRF, which is not sectorial. So there is no sectorial funding agency in the country except from the Water Research Commission. It's again very, very unique. There is some funding done by the MRC to the university, but it's peanuts. But otherwise, all those other institutions do not fund, they actually use the funds to do research. So if it is good or not, my opinion, you know, and I've been there now for 10 years, and I've been at the NRS, at the CSR, from point of being a very small public entity, my business could be part of a bigger umbrella. You know, from point of operation. On the other end, the focus that we get right now, as for research in water, on water in this country, and where we are, globally and within the country, for point of research on water, has great consequences of having a water research commission. So I think it is the pro and con to every arrangement. Worry I'm as personally is that the organization will disappear. Funds will disappear the moment it will be put into a bigger umbrella.
Yeah,
maybe
I think that, I mean, clearly one is not expressing a definitive view because one doesn't want to, one is not disagreeing necessarily with the minister that has raised it. But I do think we must be very, very careful. See, there's no big problem with seeing that research in general should be in one place, particularly when you've got a science technology. But you see, this is what I keep on saying about policy in government that worries me, is that if the Constitution says that policy derives from the executive, and that's what the Constitution says, that legislation comes to Parliament, justice goes to justice, and policy comes from government. Now, you can understand that it would be at least a bad perception if government itself, the department, were to directly fund research. Well, it creates a perception, you know, this is not done in a way that's necessarily objective, etc., because the government wants to research. So you create a body that is closely linked to the department in terms of its policy objectives and what it wants to achieve, yet it's separate because it needs to have that bit of distance in terms of giving money to the research. So it makes very good sense that it's like that. And I must say, your problem is that if you have a political agreement that the money does not come from the fiscus, but it comes from a levy, and once you start moving the structure away from the department that's involved, clearly that department is not necessarily, as priorities go, the priorities will start slipping. Why fund something is not? But it's linked to us that we can't engage in terms of what research and priorities we want to start. So I do think that whatever we, because I have heard this question whether the water just comes to the moving science and technology before this speech was made. I must say we must look at this thing very, very carefully because, as the CEO correctly said, There are, of course, pros and cons. There will always be pros and cons. I mean, there's nothing in the world that you don't get at least one pro and a few cons, or one con and a few pros. But in terms of the balance and where and how important water is in the bigger setup of our country and its development, I think we would be very careful before we start moving these structures and so on, because it could have some unexpected consequences. So if that debate does take place at any case, I mean, I hope we'll be part of the debate where we can give our points of view to it. But from the chair where I sit now, my preliminary view has been when this question was raised the first time a few months ago, I'm of the view that I would be very, very careful to have the benefit of this being swallowed up in a big research body when it's a unique kind of funding, unique way of achieving those objectives. As I said, my only issue has been that I think there are one or two such burning issues in water that we should be giving a special focus on this. And this should not be necessarily part of a bid process, but it should be where we go and look for the right determinant. And as you explained, CEO, when we put the different components together and say, do this research for us, I would like to see some of that, at least in one or two areas. Desalination always attracts me, because when the Namibians were here, clearly it's something that they discussed about, and it's something that I've looked within the climate change, the funding available in climate change, to what extent can we get this money for research on desalination? Because a lot of poor countries who have a sea next to it would have huge development potential if research is done to get cheap ways that those countries could afford it. So, you know, that kind of thinking, I may not be right in what I'm saying, but it's the idea that I think is true. So I think it's more a question of having one or two focuses, but keeping closely linked to our objective. Because once we start getting, you know, the minister's busy with a turnaround strategy on the, once those things start happening, then you see the thing that Mr. Morgan is raising, of your department then has more capacity with solving its problems and so on. Now they have to start finding more ways of getting the licenses and more water resources and how to fund these licenses, to how to provide water for these. Then the more better functioning structure you have, the more important is your research capacity. Because then the department really needs to work cleverly and scientifically in terms of what is the research against, in terms of how it does it. You know, the question of more dams, less dams, whatever, you know, so all those kind of questions. Then very good research is the way really to go, and that one doesn't move in the, and databases. For me, databases, what information we have plus the research we've done are the things that then drive those processes. So if this debate arrives, please let us be part of it, Mr. Alcott, and let us at least hear our views before we have those debates. I'm not saying they are happening, I'm just saying if they do. The department?
Chair, thank you. Can I make two comments and then I want to hand over to Bangeni Pumala? He can add on that when we meet integration of other institutions. Two comments, the way that we interact, also with the Water Research Commission. We come to an agreement if from a certain research they find it's an area where we need a policy change, that they write a specific recommendation to the department. It was, for example, a study done on eutrophication. And they say if we should ban phosphates, it can have substantial influence on dams like Rivierspoort. So they wrote such a policy recommendation. So that's a good result feeding from research to effect of policy. The other one is the one we touched on, Chair, is desalination. They wrote a good research on desalination plants for municipalities. And we said, this is such a good research, we need a guideline for municipalities. So we from the department funded a guideline, a book that municipalities can use. So that is the interaction, taking research, making practical for users. Bangi wants to respond to the issue of integration. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think you've covered a bit on some of the things I was going to raise, and I think you've also covered that.
What I can just add is that the areas where we are looking at now in terms of engagement would be especially the issues of what are the key areas of life, areas where the focus should be. Then we have a chapter on research or area on research and innovation in the National Water Resources Project. So the process, that process should actually draw on the issues of water and transport, what are the key areas in the next 5 years or whatever it is.
I think what I'm saying is, you know, the only way to do this is actually to sit down with a research council from time to time annually when they do the interview. But actually to start looking at this. You see, the issue, for example, that worries me is, you know, the acid mine drainage issue. The acid mine drainage issue is, on the one hand, something that's vital for us to resolve, particularly if I live in Gauteng and I look at that water. It's obviously vital. Secondly, it could be another source of water for us. But the problem is, it's becoming highly commercialized because there are huge groups of people that see the opportunity to make money out of it. Now, that's not a bad thing. Every opportunity that arises, people should be able to, our people, to be able to grow and develop, should look at those opportunities. The problem is that if we do not get the right kind of research that's done for us, we may make decisions which take us into a field of commercialization with a lot of money. Because if people take this issue and start making it a motive issue, and you know, and then you have pressure on government, you have pressure on everyone to try and deal with the issue, then we may deal with the issue in a way that actually benefits certain commercial interests rather than solving the way in the most effective way for the taxpayer. Now, I'm not saying that's happening, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying the possibility exists. You know, if I tell you how many letters I've received of people that tell me of these perfect ways they have the perfect answer to solve acid mine drainage. Now, it may well be that it is so. The problem is, for us as policymakers, it's very vital that we get the right research. For you as government that has been given 400 million rand to spend on to deal with this problem, it is absolutely vital, over and above the expert report we've got, that we respond correctly to these things. And we don't get taken on people's special interests and get taken for a runaround and looking at those issues instead of trying to look scientifically and objectively at the right solution. Now this is where I'm saying, you know, there may be a place for some specific research and a capacity that exists, so it's an ongoing thing. So we, you know, they tell, I mean, you have told yourself that the problem doesn't just exist in the Nevada front, it's in other parts of the country as well. Now, you see, it's not just a thing that's going to go away tomorrow. So we have to get, you know, the best research and the continuous best research, and the bugs that the CEO is talking about. Give me the room to tell me to put a bug in the water, but okay, I mean, you know, maybe it solves the problem, so it's a bug that we can live with. When it pools in the water and so on, what I'm trying to say is, I think, and this is not a criticism of the commission, I think that they, the way that they provided everything, that's an excellent way. I like the way of the transparency and so on. So exactly that you're not promoting the Sahrailan kit projects and so on at the expense of the rest of the country and so on. Because it's open and transparent, it's gone through a process. If that gets through, well then so be it, and it may help other farmers and so on. But it's very important that it's open and transparent. Because with 100 million rand, it's important that we send it right and not on the commercial interests of particular individuals and so on, but in the bigger group. So those farmers, or a farmer, it may be well that we can get a solution for them, it may be a bigger solution. So you know, I'm not criticizing at all that kind of process, but I think you have, I mean, everything I see about this commission except the bonuses, is a wonderful, I mean, I like it, I like what's happening and so on. But I do say, I think there's a little need at the moment. As we go to the part that I think the signs are there that it's starting to move and sorting itself out and so on. That we're right in the terms of identifying those one or two areas where we're doing the kind of research we want through multidisciplinary teams that we put together, not necessarily through the business and so on. So I would like you to think about that a bit and maybe come next year and tell us there is one or two such projects. And if that means a little bit more money, that means using the money we have, or maybe we could do it for a year. But how about, you know what I'm trying to say? I mean, you have the ideas that I'm trying to say. We must get this research commission to really be the strong focal point that we act in a scientific and, or as scientific and objective way as we can when it comes to providing the needs of water in this country. Right. Okay, are those all the questions? Everyone happy? Oh, more questions?
Capacity building. In the annual report from previous year, it says 46 million breakdown of capacity per institution. In the current executive report that has been submitted, we did actually provide the total number of students, 68% are male and 32 are female. And we try to actually group females in the participation in PhD. We actually, it's 520. I'm not, the thing is why we actually don't say 500 euro, we don't say 520. It's basically material that comes from the university, and it's verified to the best of our ability. The quality and the accuracy of this research is better than the Because those contracts should provide us with things that will be useful to the country and get the same kind of meals for capacity. The NRS provides for bursaries, and often you will see cooperation between funds from the NRS and the WRC. And the bursary for the students will cost you, you know, the funds, for example, as part of bursary from the NRS, and we have no objection to this. Normally, we provide advice to the NRS as for projects that relate to our team. Okay, so I think that answers that I want. A complaint of a scorecard methodology. For the last few years, we indeed explained, you know, and I know you look at it cynically, as soon as possible. We say that basically you don't get a bonus for doing two work, therefore we will put the scorecard methodology in. And the scorecard methodology has three targets: an excellent target, a very good target, and a good target. For a good target, you don't get any bonus. You will get partially bonus for very good and excellent targets, for me, that you have to do. And it's between the line management, its employee, and it's between us and the board, and it's between us and our shareholder, because we report to the shareholder. We say the aim is not basically to do our job. To do our job is basically funding. Our job is to be an excellent organization. The idea is that you run a dynamic hub that is excelling in what it's doing. For that to build excellent targets that are above the run of the mill. Therefore, the target put in the scorecard and the scorecard.
I think you must finish your answer on this quickly. Because all it does is like.
I can justify it. I have an MBA in scorecard methodology. I think I can explain.
I don't agree about that.
That's okay.
I mean, clearly a scorecard that allows 80% of its employees to have done so much that they've gone beyond the call of duty is just an impossibility. Mathematically, it's an impossibility. Like saying that, you know, anything that you do, any organization, 80% of its people did so well that they entitled to 16% bonuses. 16% of the pension will study the CEO got. Which is 120,000 Rand. And then your category A non-SMS, 20 of them, get almost 11% bonus. Your non-SMS get a 6% bonus. Your category A MMS gets 6.56. And there's 7 of them. And then there's the 9 of your SMS category A, which got almost 8%. This is an organization that does administration. It administers both funding to research. 80% of them work on the whole of duty. Just leave that question.
Okay, I think. I think that's
building and workshop. If you look at business plan, it's a makeup for the for that item. But for financial reporting purposes, yes, maybe for the future, maybe we might need to unpack that amount and clearly get a note to clarify. But so the information is provided in the business plan as to how we make up the research component, which is 70% of our total expenditure. I trust that answers your question.
The thing that is here for already the qualified for you is unqualified for the auditor report. Because the under 6 million rand, it didn't break down for the inside. How you can qualify for the financial settlement? I don't understand. This one is not allowed. Because 70% expenditure you didn't show to the committee where money is spent. So then you just put the 106 million, which spend a little money. These are not allowed for the initial financial statement. I thought that these are the this one can not break down for the all the big amount.
In future, we'll obviously do in our future financial statements, we'll do a breakdown of what's made up of research. But in terms of accounting standards, I think at this point in time, I think we comply with the essentials. So, yes, the point is taken. For the sake of transparency, we might have to break the 106 or what the future amounts will be.
Any further questions? Nothing?
Is that it?
All right. As I said,
Chairperson, that was fun. Yeah, I just follow up for this phone after this meeting. Because it's...
I'm
very happy for the both the entity, centrally for the committee. This is an honor. I like this one. But inside for the from this lumber, we don't know what title, what position. So I can't see what his salary he gets, how he can calculate he gets 10%, 6%. This one we don't know. We just see you give the name, but I don't know who is the director, who is the or the research manager, or who is the faculty. We don't know. Who is the cleaner?
Look on the next one, they do give you.
But then we don't know the inside is the owner.
Yeah.
Who is the position?
But I think we must be careful, Dr. Pang. I think this is a lot of information. I think this gives us a clear picture. Or we must know that it's something we don't like. That's all you have to know. At this stage. Let's hope this is a new trend. They were the first ones that the partners told them to
yeah.
What we want.
Yeah.
So they've given it. So I think it's a good day. Yeah. It's easier for them. They only got 55 people. So you can imagine the ones that the thousands are going to. Then you're going to have real problems wading through them and trying to see what's going on. Okay, look, I want to say to you, first I'm glad that you came. The first thing to see the sort of chapter. Yeah. Very important that the board knows what management is reporting here and what we are saying to the organization. So that you can take it back to the over and above the fact that management is here and they will be here and they will be here. So I think that's the first thing. Secondly, on the whole, there is very little that one can complain about what has happened. Obviously, one doesn't have a picture fully of all the research we're doing. We have the categories and that. And it's difficult to make an assessment. But I'm assuming that between the department and themselves that you're doing that well and you've got a good balance and seems to me everyone seems relatively happy. Then I'm happy about all your financial statements and things. I think that good. An organization like this that's small, that's the kind of world in which you've never had any financial problems. I think you're adding up. CMO, next time I hope you add up much better between you and the department. But so all those things are very good. We've raised one possibility of looking at it, and so on. And I do think I want to inculcate in all entities and the department. We started with them, we now with the entities. To look at this thing on the ground. You see, we must rather be honest. I've always said in government, if you want to give employees a 13th check, rather say you're going to give them a 13th check. Rather do that. And be honest and give them a 13th check. Trying to do this whole bonus system is just basically a big fraud that we put. And I put fraud in inverted commas. Because everyone, every of the entities, and the department and all the staff, they all go through this, getting these bonuses. You know, we should have the most perfectly run country in the world. On the basis of bonuses, we should have the most, in the water sector, we should have the most perfect water sector. Because every organization that comes here, including the department, 80% of the people get bonuses. And they all tell me, no, but sir, really it is beyond the work they do. Now, if 80% of all our departments and our entities are doing 80% of work over and above that which they should be doing, you know, for me, it just boggles my mind that we have people. Really. I mean, I want someone to mathematically and logically go and see why the problem in the water sector. Why is this department not running as smoothly as, for example, the environment department? Well, I know why. Because they have 60,000 employees and plus all these entities. They got thousands and thousands of people we have to oversee. Their practices in the past have been bad. But yes, 80% of everyone gets a bonus. So that is what the issue is here. That is what the issue is here. As I said to people, if the government and if the trade union want a 13th step, then say it's a 13th step. And no one will have a problem with it. But you do this what you're doing now, it's total dishonesty. I don't care how much the CEO shakes her head, and how much he says how wonderful she is and all the degrees she's got, and so on. I don't care about this. It's a fraud. That's what it means. Because 80%, you know, if 80% of an administrative body that actually decides on research and hands over money are doing work that is so wonderful about what they actually should be doing. I mean, just by stating the fact, this doesn't sound ridiculous. You don't even have to think about it. So I think this is what we're trying to inculcate about this bonus issue. If you come to me and tell me that there are three people in your organization that have got bonus, the CFO got a bonus because he developed a most unique way of accounting which hasn't been there before. And it's most unique, innovative, and the rest of the civil service are now using it, and we think this guy needs a bonus because he has done something beyond the call of duty. And I will applaud, I will be the first one to applaud that. If you come to me and tell me that there is a person that has actually found an area of research and put a team together and got the most brilliant stuff that has happened, and that person has done something that's gone beyond the call of duty, that he should be doing is to earn 12 checks a year, then I would say that's fine. That is what I want to inculcate with bonuses. And this is not just that I'm sitting here. I have always, in the last, from that I got into government in 1994, I have been fighting about bonuses. Even in the communication sector, we try to get them to completely relook their issues and try to deal with it. Exactly because of this issue. Because it's a 13th check, that is all it is. And when it becomes a 13th check, there's a discrimination attached to it because the other 20% don't get the check. That's the problem. So, I want people to understand this issue that I'm raising. This issue is not just being raised because of bloody miners. This issue is being raised that if we have a department and a sector that 80% of our people are working beyond the call of duty, then for God's sake, let the work reflect that we are there. But the work does not reflect. And I'm not talking about individuals, but some organizations may do well in terms of what they should be doing. But that is the issue, and I think I have the full support, as far as I know, of all the committee members on this issue. That this is what we want to inculcate into people, and what we understand that people have to start looking at. Because this money we're wasting on, it can be used for other things, for other projects, for what we need to provide services to the poor. Now we're paying a lot of money to what work should be done. And as I said, if you want to call it a 13th check, then do that. Particularly in these entities, they may be able to easier do it than we do it in government. But I, having said all that, I want you to leave on a very positive note. But I don't want you to leave on that negative note. I want you to leave that your work and what you do is what you should be doing in terms of the legislation, in terms of everything I've seen, and that you guys are doing it. Okay? And I want you to understand that. All right, let's have a 5-minute break, literally five, and then let's get back. It will be the Kaladin, Tom Kaladin.
We are all these people. They might be targeting the government itself.
Presentation today is going to be touching on the project management. I'm just going to run a few slides on that, which basically gives us the focus that we are following through as an organization. And the CEO will touch and unpack that a bit more in terms of the value proposition. And Johan will touch on the exact mandate of our company and our project, just to give a picture on what is happening in that regard. And the CFO will then give the financial overview. I should indicate that we're in a situation with water reserve commission in the sense that we still did with the water process. So we will be running through last year's financial and in terms of more indicators going forward. Just starting with the purpose of CCTA, again, just to remind members that the nature of CCTA is that we're a special purpose vehicle established by the Department of Water Affairs to raise off-budget funding for projects, and specifically mega projects that are oriented towards sustaining the water resource and capability of the country. When we say special purpose vehicle, we say the nature of our entity that we actually respond to specific requirements and mandates from the Department of Water Affairs. They would be the one that do the planning around water security issues of the country and do the feasibility study, and they would identify the projects that they would then say CCTA as a special purpose vehicle. You raise the funding and you do the implementation of this project. So which means, in other words, we do not get as an organization a specific budget allocation from the department to aid to the project further. The purpose of this construction work off budget is twofold. Number one is to ensure that the cost of the construction is paid for by the end user. This is a principle that has been there in the water sector from the early days of the legislation being put in place. The user pays principle, and particularly we're dealing here with large users who are mainly commercial users, and in most cases this starts to happen now even about municipal users. And the intention was to say the cost of the true cost of water has got to start being reflected in the way we develop infrastructure in the country, and this needs to be done in a manner that we can ease the burden from the national fiscal in terms of funding such projects by making users to be off-taker of this project, so that reducing the borrowing requirements from the national treasury. CPTA implements directives in accordance to government policy, and mainly there I want to indicate that as much as I indicated that we would not normally initiate the project. The project is part of the long-term plan of the government from the Department of Water Affairs in terms of looking at water security related issues, and there will be the study. And in raising the funding, we go through a process of negotiating with funders or financiers. And the price, the tariffs that we derive are covered by the price strategy of government. So while we see the framework of the national price policy that the department has agreed to, and our tariffs are actually specifically approved and negotiated and accepted by off-takers. And it is a rising block tariff, so the higher you use, the more you pay.
The tariffs, is that agreed to up front, or do they do that every year? The tariffs.
Thank you, Chair. Once we agree, it's the principle that for the next 20 years, we'll be implementing this infrastructure. And because we have this 20-year forecast, we'll also give them indicative targets based on the economic information that we use from the Bureau of Economic Society. So then on an annual basis, that target gets to be adjusted to the real inflation, if there's the inflation that is closer to more or less the appropriate inflation. It's no longer 2.4 as per our model in 2011 and 12, then we adjust according to what is the latest outlook. So essentially, the answer is yes, we agree upfront, but on a yearly basis, we still need to go back to the off-takers and negotiate again. Remember, these were the principles and these are the circumstances under which the tariff would be adjusted. This is the time now we need to look into the tariff.
And there's a fourth set of tariffs, the TCTA tariffs. They also get changed annually.
Yes, we call it the capital unit charge, because that tariff is specifically meant to repay the debt. So the off-takers would know upfront that CCTA will raise 2 billion, and this 2 billion needs to be repaid over a period of 10 years, and in order to repay the tariff for the next 20 years, kind of. But they do know that we might say in 2013 the tariff could be adjusted by inflation outlook of 2.5. But come here 2013, the actual outlook has changed from 2.5.
You've got a base tariff and then annually you deduct all.
We just adjust with the what is closer to the
year. Right, so that's a fourth tariff regime that I wasn't aware of. Okay.
So it's a principle, so they know under what conditions the tariff will be adjusted other than the inflation. Should there be any certain.
It's all in the contract and stuff.
Yes, it's all in the contract and agreed at once.
Okay, go ahead.
Just to finish off the slide, and we are finding that there is currently a serious funding shortfall on the operational maintenance and the placement of national water resource infrastructure, and this is what necessitates the very like CPTA assisting with raising funding of budget for the development of new infrastructure. Moving on to the next slide, and just on specific strategic objectives now, I'll just run through the first is to deliver all mandates provided by the minister in accordance with specifications and within agreed timelines and budgets. When the mandate is given to us, given with specific parameter, budget, time for what is divided, and also the conditions that are being prescribed by the ministry in giving those mandates. So our objective is to deliver within all those parameters that are displayed in the mandate. We also facilitate social transformation and build sustainable communities by providing jobs and empowerment. We have been looking at doing things differently, not just being a provider of infrastructure, but understanding the context that we're providing this whatever it was with infrastructure, in ensuring that the goals, the national goals of transformation within the engineering sector in particular, or the water sector, are fulfilled through the projects that are being implemented. And we have been working over the last mandate that we've been working on in making sure that we leave a legacy beyond just the water resources infrastructure of the community that we have been working in. We can elaborate on that as we have started the mandate. We operate the business projects and processes in a cost-effective manner, conscious of the imperatives of the PFMA. And I should say that besides just the PSMA that we're working within as the regulatory framework, we are constantly engaged with off-takers who are becoming even more militant and diligent in ensuring that we are doing everything that we're doing within reasonable cost parameters, and we are cost-effective in the way we both raise the funding and in the way we implement the project in particular. So we are engaged with this off-takers, and some of them actually sit in the project steering committee and the Monica project as they go through from month to month and create the program. Moving on to the other strategies, we build the knowledge and capability of the organization to generate lessons from project improvement and pursuit of greater efficiency in water delivery. We're doing this not just for the organization. We believe that the work that we are doing as an organization is very unique and it's highly specialized work for the sector. So we need to be consciously building a knowledge base that can be shared to build capacity and lessons learned from projects that we roll out should actually benefit the sector going forward. So we have recently been embarking now on more robust knowledge management processes within the organization to ensure the knowledge sharing and documentation of lessons learned on project implementation. And lastly, we ensure continuous availability of high caliber human capital for delivering on organizational mission into the future while remaining valuable in agile entities. And I should indicate the issue of being an agile entity is quite critical for us because, as I said, we're a special purpose vehicle that has been launched by the Department of Water Affairs to fulfill a specific mandate. And we know that the needs of the sector start being broader than the original mandate of water resources on infrastructure development. And as an organization, we are gearing ourselves to have capabilities that will be able to respond to other needs that are beyond the core of what CCPA was established to do. And this will be through having the high caliber human capital within the organization. That basically covers at a high level the broad strategic objectives, and I'll turn over to the CEO to start unpacking the data.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Member. can I just ask you, there's a fundamental challenge already. We dealt with the Ngeni water bill, mm-hmm. and there's this Springfield Dam.
Springground.
Some spring over there, it's like Agile. Where they added 32% to the tariff. And they told us that money goes to you before you built the dam. Well, you know, one of the things I'm worried about and one of the things we're starting to discuss, I don't know what the answer is to it, is that if you look at the way the water board operates and this principle you mentioned, that the users pay, then of course it creates a huge problem, of course, in this country because of the legacy. If you let the users pay, then the vast bulk of users in this country
terms of numbers, not necessarily in terms of the amount of water they use. Okay, good. And if the poor have to carry, them being the consumer, then it seems we have a system when it comes to water. It may not be like another part of government, but when it comes to water, we don't have a subsidy base other than the free water that we give to people. But what worries me, you see, that's in terms of the use of water. But you deal with the infrastructure. And I'm trying to work out in my own head, and I need you guys to help me understand this. To what extent are we letting the poor, on the basis of being consumers, equally pay for the creation of the infrastructure? Because that part clearly with your project definitely is not subsidized. You see, you go to Mgeni. You're going to build a Springfield Dam because there's a real need in Ikekweni for water. We all know that. So the only way we can do it quickly, we haven't got money in our budget in the fiscal, so we can't ask Treasury to build a dam, so we get you guys and you build it. Then clearly someone must pay for it. Your whole model, which I like your model, I mean the whole idea of it, but your model is a lovely one in an ideal world. But, you know, you look at, if you come to me and you say, well, I'm funding the ESCOM for their thing, and I can understand. There's a big lot of farmers, I'm funding them, although the consumer in the end will get it. But when we're building a dam, and our bigger funder for it is going to be Ikekweni Municipality, and that 32% increase that's going to go through comes to you. But that 32% now applies to every single consumer in Ikekweni. Or can't you answer it in the department or the municipality that should answer? So in other words, can you see what I'm trying to ask you? In a special project like this, are we letting the poor pay for the infrastructure? That's what I'm asking.
Thank you, Chair.
The department can also respond.
I will touch on the principle, and maybe the executives will touch on the details, particularly the 30% that has been mentioned, and the department can add. Just on the principle of the user pay, the way government designed this as a principle is to say that the value chain of water supply should start reflecting the true cost of bringing water to the people. But where subsidization needs to happen, it needs to be clearly identified to be happening at the ultimate end user level. This is why, for instance, the instrument was put in place of the free labor force. This is why at municipal level, they do get grants that deal with the indigent. It's to say that the poor needs to be clearly identified. Because in fact, when that has not been done, you get cases where the poor are actually subsidizing the rich in the way the infrastructure has been developed, because they were the last ones to come alive. And now they end up paying a bigger cost. So a system that was designed then is to say, let there be specific instruments that are looking at alleviating the burden on the poor in terms of them being affected by the user pay principle. But let me then ask.
So in terms of the model, the whole price of the model gets sent through to the user, including municipalities where poor people get, or in some cases water boards where poor people get their money. And then the subsidization takes place there. Now, okay, so Ikekweni, Ikekweni, does it provide a help up? Does it provide its own water, does all of it go through the water board?
Ikekweni, I think most of the water comes through the Ingeni water board.
That's why we've got the 32%
increase.
But so that whole 32% is now going to go through to the users of Ikekweni water.
I think I also want to ask Mohammed, because after we had Ingeni here, we did a lot of research on exactly what is happening. And I think between Mohammed and Zotwa, we can answer exactly how that. I think it was a misinterpretation that day, and we can clarify that 38% it was quoted here and also quoted in the press.
And that's good that we're going to do that, but that's a separate issue. I still want to understand the principle.
Yeah.
So the principle would be that in terms of the creation of the infrastructure, if a municipality signs an agreement with TCDA, then that municipality is going to carry the burden.
Correct.
Then whether a poor person actually pays for that or not depends on whatever that municipality puts in place.
Yeah. In the Greenwich case, say if they owe from Granny 100 million per year, that money is paid through the consumers that pay for the water, the rich people that can pay, as well as subsidies. So it's paid in total by the municipality, and they cross-subsidize. In effect, they cross-subsidize so that they enable the poor people to have that free basic water.
So to do any proper analysis of this, you'll have to go to each municipality and check how their structure works in terms of their clients to see whether the poor actually carries the burden or not. Because of infrastructure.
Can I also say on what my colleagues have said? If you go to the municipalities, remember some of this infrastructure comes as a result of the expansion of the industrial requirements, if you look at SEP. So you would not necessarily find that the poor is carrying the burden, because the poor may not be able to afford it within the municipality level, because they stratify their client base. So the argument that the municipalities will have, they'll say, so you are burdening those who are able, you know, the goods that is laying the egg. They are not looking at the one that can't lay the egg in any event. So essentially or effectively what you are doing is the additional tariff will be incurred by those who can afford within the municipal stratification of their customer base. So the poor do not pay for this infrastructure. And I think we need to go back as well on the rationale for this model of funding projects of budget spaces, because first the department, when they do the planning, they look at the ability of the community or of the area where the infrastructure needs to be put in place. It's usually the growth node. I mean, if you look at the oil fund as well, you know, one of our projects, the requirement is because of the mine. Yes, there is a social aspect of it, but they want to leverage on those who can afford to pay. So the complaint can come from those who
can But the point you make is, you see, we must be careful to say the poor doesn't pay for it. Because you have to go and analyze that municipality.
Yeah.
Is it really providing properly the free basic water? I've heard anecdotally that in some municipalities the free water is not being given necessarily or not being given adequately or correctly. And then secondly, you have to go and look at the tariffs that apply. Because, I mean, I may be earning a salary, but my salary may be as a domestic worker.
Yes.
And whatever, and but I use more than 6,000 water, so then I have to pay for that at some kind of tariff. But okay, so the analysis that takes place at the municipal level. Okay.
Just one other point on the Sunkov in particular. You know, Etewini can actually afford even to roll out this kind of infrastructure on their own financially. Mm-hmm. That's how much they can afford. I don't want to set also the argument that, you know, Etewini has got all their cases and they pay the lowest tariff, you know, because that is also relative. But the point is, Etewini can fund even the project on the back of their own financially without even relying on the CBA model. That's how much they can afford to implement this.
It may or may not be, so the problem is they're not going to lose their reserves. They're going to lose the 32% that they've charged people this year to fund your project.
Yes.
That's what they're going to do. They're going to add 32% to that.
What is happening as well, what in terms of the percentage, you know, we are starting from the low base. Now, once you put in new infrastructure, naturally the tariff will go high, just for that particular year. But thereafter, the tariff will level out. Because the adjustment going forward from just, you need to take off. Once you've taken off, you level up, so you adjust the inflation. So it won't be an adjustment. I mean, and if we look at the model for the sprinkle in particular, the forecast for the inflation is around 5.34%. You know, that we are putting the model, or that we'll be adjusting it closer to what the output would be.
No, I understand.
But
that.
It is,
yeah, I understand that. That's not my worry. My worry is in
here.
Okay. You still want to add something more?
Just in absolute numbers, the 32% both sound high. It's actually a 42-cent increase from the or 46-cent increase. I've been looking at the current tariff at
Australian municipalities, and it ranges between 10 rand to 12 rand. So this increase represents less than a half a percent increase.
Obviously, if they are charging too much, the next election they'll be thrown out. So that's fine. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. But the point is it's my responsibility here in this committee and to see how these things work in reality and to analyze and see. And it does seem to me that we need to do more work in this world. So obviously, through the department, I think we're going to have to talk to you. Maybe in July we'll have to look at how we're going to look at this. But I think we're going to have to analyze each municipality how it operates in terms of what tariff is charging at the moment and so on and so on. When you hear that Itekweni is at the lowest, is that a good thing? Is it good that we don't have a uniform tariff for the whole country, etc., etc.? All those kind of questions. Because ultimately, what happens is that if we're going to work on this basis, and the good functioning municipalities, people won't have a problem there. The bad functioning ones, you can be damn sure that those people are going to suffer and they're going to have problems there in those areas. So I think I'll have to think about it a bit more and see how we need to tackle this thing and properly analyze and see what it means in reality in a country that we're treating ourselves. Want to add something else?
This is a way forward to maybe an idea. You say you're coming in July to engage with the department. We can, at that time, show you what information we have on three basic water, which municipalities provide what, and also on municipal tariffs. So we do have that information available.
Okay. Sorry, I interrupted you there. I need to just try and clarify that principle before we start with that.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. What I will try and engage you on is basically how we basically take some of the strategic principles that were given by the Deputy Chairperson Board. Because the organization was off balance sheet, effectively we have positioned it to look more or less like people who are competing with us in the market. So we will have banker skills. We will have the best engineering skills in the market. We'll have the project financiers. We'll have liability managers, treasurers, because our interest is really to get the best price for the provision of water off balance sheet. And that is why, Chairperson, if you look at our products and services as they stand at the moment, we emphasize the issues of liability management throughout, which is risk management, but at the same time to make sure that we can build an organization that can engage strategically with the market when we look for the money that we're looking for. Also, we strengthen our ability to go out there and look for the cheapest funding. Just an example, Chairperson, the same project you mentioned, which is Spring Grove, we were able during the recession to raise the most cost-effective funding in the market when everybody else was charging at least JIBOR plus 225. We managed to buy that money at JIBOR plus 95 basis points in the international market, which therefore means the benefit of getting cheaper money translates itself to the tariff that ended up being charged. In this case, the KZN environment charges 15 cents per cubic meter raw, and you can imagine with this project we're just getting another thing. What we're also strengthening in our mix is the ability to make sure that where we deliver the project, we also make sure that the poor people that would have been either moved because of the land that we want to use is to begin to strengthen our sustainable utilization plan. I think in your presentation, Chair, it comes out as local economic development, but it's effectively where we're saying we will leave some kind of economic vibrance in that locality. For example, yes, sometimes we do leave housing, Chairperson, as you've seen in the Bad River project, I think it's page 34 on the annual report. At the same time, we try and leave other business so that people can find their livelihood. We also stimulate some kind of leisure tourism business, things like hiking along the dam, and people can appreciate that. So that there's a bit of income that comes to the project going down the line. Our emphasis on forcing transformation in the sector is with no sympathy. We do have the five big major construction companies in this country that have the capacity to deliver on these big projects. But as an organization, we have also accepted the position that we need to transform the sector, and that's in the growth of women companies, of small black companies. Yes, in terms of the principles of application of the government being the requirement, enterprise development, the organization is emphasizing that. But Chairperson, in terms of enterprise development, for us, it's people or companies that just implemented what is required by law. For us, that's the beginning of the country. So if you come to us and say you have a JV and you've got a black company that you're working with, for us it's still at zero, because we add on top of that some requirements where they go an extra mile, buying from the locals, training the locals, at the same time build the capacity of additional two small black companies and increase their turnover over the duration of construction period. We recognize that because the sector we're in, we buy skills that are quite scarce in the market and quite expensive. For example, we're trading same skills as the private sector in terms of bankers in our midst. We also buy treasurers in our midst. But also we've accepted that we'll build a skills pipeline, because we do lose these people quickly to the market. So you see that the organization is strengthening its skills development program and internship program. In terms of sourcing the accountants, sourcing the engineers, the project managers, we go far into rural areas and also train young people who ultimately the organization employ into the organization. Because we recognize that the risk in terms of what we do lies in the ability of us getting the cash flows to pay for the project that we are funding. Chairperson, I think it was in February when you also challenged us with the Honourable Member Morgan to say how do we stretch ourselves to support the department with our skills, but also begin to manage our abilities to deal with the risk, because if people can't pay the tariffs and the municipalities and water boards don't have the systems and the pricing mechanisms that are properly, or their treasury management is not sound. We've extended ourselves, Chairperson. You'll see that in terms of our advisory services that comes from a knowledge capacity of the organization, we've started contributing to the department's general strategy and the water training entity, for example. You see us contributing our project management and capability on the issues of the asset mine trading solutions, particularly how we can deliver in terms of engineering solutions. There's a pipeline in the Northern Cape, Chairperson, where we've been asked to assist in pricing for that pipeline, whether it needs to be replaced or rehabilitated. We're giving our strategic advice on that. The intention is that we want to farm the skills and bring some skills which...
She is giving advice on the water trading industry.
Chairperson, I think...
I hope it's sound advice, because it's not working at the moment.
Yes, Chairperson, I think we reported to the committee in February that we have given our initial risk management appraisal. So we're hoping that the department is rolling out the program, which will inform us then, because it's important for us to get that banking facility to work for all of us. Because also banks, when they give us money, they look through into that bank where it works or not. Chairperson, maybe just to conclude my session before the colleague gives you a full rundown of what our project I want to be, just to emphasize three elements. One is that we have quite a few directives that we're implementing, totaling a value of a few billion of rand that we can share with you, that all of our projects are fully funded. The market has been quite supportive, Chairperson, to say it will fund 58 projects. Secondly, broad the money market business that we're also running. We've been also having quite a huge subscription on our bonds, I think three times to be precise. But we also make sure that we're agile and we sell when necessary. We fix our interest rate figures when necessary, so that we can make the price of water rather than the price take up in the market?
I think the colleagues will give you a rundown of our project and how far we are. All of them are fully funded, something we do not have major problems. And I think we, that's what can assure you that this project will be in the market on time and that debt will be paid over 20 years.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is the project where TCI is standing in for the government to make sure that all the borrowings on this project, particularly on Phase 1, will be repaid over the 20-year period. That process is ongoing, and we are on budget to repay In fact, we have this year also introduced a further increase in the tariff in light on phase two, which will obviously construction will start later this year. When we reported in February, we highlighted that we were negotiating with the city to complete phase two agreement. At that point in time, we had one issue outstanding, which related to the city's requirement to have almost a guarantee from South Africa in terms of electricity sales from the fund storage scheme. This matter has been receiving a lot of attention, and I'm happy to report that, in fact, the city is last week acting director general of water affairs. Principal Secretary of the City has signed this kind of agreement. So phase two agreement will now be put into respective government system, and hopefully by end June, July, the phase two agreement will be officially signed. The project implementation has started.
All those problems are gone now.
All of those problems are gone. So we have started with some preparatory work. The work will be able to start our second project, which is being extremely completed in 2007. The status of that project is that we are delivering water to the city of Cape Town. We are collecting our revenues and plans. In fact, we are well ahead of schedule to repay the debt of that project under the respective time period. Really on that project,
that money, that doesn't go through a water board, that goes straight through to the municipality. This is an instance where you have a metro that does it directly and not through a water board like it's a Queen. And in that case, how far do you people set the tariff with the municipality? Meaning the department. Who sets the tariff?
It's done by the capital charge that we use to pay the loans that we pay.
No, it's not the use of the I understand your work.
It's charged in terms of the payment that's by the department. The raw water. The raw water. The raw water.
Maybe just to answer to the process, once you have agreed with the offtake, I think we did. Your Cape Town industry for that one component. When we do the presentation to the off-takers, we give the full presentation of the tariff, not one component. CTA makes the presentation and TSC, the department makes the presentation in other O&M and other charges. So we give the off-taker, you know, the full view of the tariff. But once that has been agreed, we still need to go through a formal process of submitting the tariff to the department as well, because the department needs to approve the tariff and look at the reliability and the affordability and the circumstances under which the increase is taking place. So where the department may feel like maybe, or maybe the off-taker may complain to the department, then, you know, they'll bring us together and say, guys, can you talk, you know, and look at how best we can put this tariff such that it's affordable to both. So there is that process outside the informal process of the off-taker.
Okay,
the
next one?
The next one is the Vaal River Eastern Subsystem. This is a project that is dedicated to provide water for Sasol and for Eskom in the Tuna area. This project has been fully operational since 2008. June 2009, and we currently delivering water to the temporary pump station. As we speak, we're busy commissioning the final stage of this project, and we're happy to report that notwithstanding certain problems that we encountered during the implementation of this project, including where we had to get rid of one of the contractors, that we are still planning to complete this project within the 2.7 billion rand. Our platform and platform is in fact the satisfaction of the relationship we have in fact managed this project and seeking it to the difficult construction. The next one is the morning journey transfer scheme by Stew, which is where the spring program came into play earlier in our discussion. Chair, this is one of our new projects. We have awarded the construction the construction of this contract. And the contract has started in February. We also concluded all our institutional arrangements, which were very difficult to complete with bringing water and putting in statistics that may have carrot problems to get them all around the table. The final signed all that agreement is a main achievement for us since February this year. We also signed up on all the loan agreements, so the project is fully funded, and we had our cost standing that was honoured by the Minister of Water Affairs on the 16th of May this year, and we still plan to complete the project within the 1.7 billion rand budget, and our first water delivery is scheduled for April 2013. So we're all still going to go on this project. The next one is the Komati Water Supply Augmentation Project. That's a project that dedicates water to Eskom. We're taking basically water from the Tresa project and just extending that project supply line. The water will be used for the Cedar Power Station and also the previous Watford, Dubai, Matla Power Station. So this project is also running smoothly. We're going in the early stages. We ordered the construction contract in December, and the contract is currently on site doing the construction work. Our funding is also in place for this contract, and our expected water delivery on this project is closed tomorrow.
Yeah.
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 Extraction work, pump station. The next project is the River Water Infiltration Project. This project is a major project which is responsible for the bulk of the pollution system. The department is currently constructing the roof dam, and CCA will be responsible for implementing the pipeline for the bottom of the pollution system. In terms of constraints that we experienced with the mining industry, we had an enactment by the fire by the mines to sign unconditional off-site agreements, and this has impacted on our ability to raise funding in terms of our normal model. We are currently engaged with National Treasury through the Department of Water Affairs, and we're in the process of securing funding to proceed with phase 2C and D, which is the first two parts of this project. We are currently preparing to go out on tender, and according to our schedule, we hope to be able to award the construction contract in December this year. The allocation that we currently have from the National Treasury is approximately 1.9 billion over a 3-year period. And we will be approaching National Treasury as part of the NTS process to make sure that we've got sufficient funding. There is also a requirement for social use. There's an urgent need to provide water for certain recognized groups. And as part of our main contract, we will make sure that the emergency part of this project will serve the social requirements. Finally, in terms of our mega project, it's the Kulu Crocodile Water Plantation Project. project is critical to make sure that the big power station has sufficient water start commissioning. Our plan goes for water delivery and clean farms for difficult to fund. It's currently June 2013. We now in the tender process, and for September this year we will be awarding the construction contract for the project.
Now,
what PCIA is doing, as you can gather from what I said, is more on the infrastructure part. We have to come up with a plan for each of the basins, the different basins. We know that in the Western Basin, for example, there's already PCAT. So we're focusing on seeing if the cons, even in our newspaper, the media, see if we can't prevent that, the untreated detailed flowing current into the national river. So that's our top priority that we're dealing with. But all three basins.
Are you part of the delegation that's coming in 2 weeks' time?
So you might be, because
part of what they will want them, after they discuss the report and then tell us what they're doing, I assume that what you're telling me now is basically that.
Part of it. Okay, we have, within the very short space of time...
Okay, this one you don't have to go too much detail, we're going to give you a full input from it.
I think that concludes the presentation on the project.
Finances, this year. How much has been stolen?
Okay. We are still currently busy with our 2010-11 audit. So we are going to be giving the highlights of the previous financial year, the 2009-10 year. Just very quickly, in terms of the accounting principles on which our financial statements are based, as you would know, or as previously mentioned at this committee, every project that we do, we ring-fence the financial statements. And then we reflect the cost of the infrastructure as an asset on our balance sheet until we've actually repaid the debt. And that repayment period is normally plus minus 20 years. So we will keep the asset on our book until the point we repay it, and then we will transfer it back to the department. We work on a full cost recovery basis to the off-taker. We have a constant tariff in real terms, which increases with the consumer price index annually. In terms of that constant tariff, the main aim is to actually ensure affordability. So hence, we tie that back into 20-year repayment period. The period is as long as it is, in order to ensure that we can smooth that tariff over the 20-year period, to ensure that it is a bit more affordable to the users, rather than having a shorter debt repayment period and then bumping up the tariff for a shorter period of time. In terms of our the model that we have, it's designed to incur a deficit or a shortfall of the first number of years. And that links back directly to the principle I've just alluded to in terms of having a longer debt repayment period, hence a smooth tariff over the 20-year period. So what that would mean is that in the first number of years, your funding costs, etc., would be much higher than the actual revenue that you're generating out of the project. So you will see for every single project in the first number of years that you will be having what we call an accounting deficit. It's only once the project progresses that they would be in what we would call a cash generating phase. So it actually would then start incurring surpluses. But it's important to note that the net position over the entire period would be a break even situation, because we're not meant to be incurring profit on these projects. And for the 2019 year, it was actually the first year that our first project, LHWC, actually swung around to an accounting surplus compared to the previous year's way, as designed, it had been incurring a deficit. So for the 2019 year, our Mr. Highland Water project reflected an accounting surplus of 99 million. This is just the statement of comprehensive income for the 31st March 2010 period. We also just reflected what this actually looks like for the previous financial year, which was 2009. the revenue that we were reflecting there relates to the three projects, LHWT, BWP, and FRESA. The newer projects are expected, we would only start incurring revenue on those once we completed the infrastructure. The other income we're reflecting there is quite minor. It's relating to rental income that we have from residual property in royalties paid, in essence, in terms of the treaty that we have on the Lesotho Highlands Water Project. So on a monthly basis, we pay also royalties to the government corporate. And that is dependent on the fixed portion and a variable portion. The fixed portion, the variable portion is directly related to the volumes of water that are delivered into South Africa. And then our other operating expenses, large part of that actually relates to our staff costs. We also have non-cash flow items sitting in there, such as your amortization. If, for instance, we look at FEFA, it's quite a large chunk. It's 81 million rand of those costs that actually relate to amortization, in other words, depreciation of the water work costs that we've incurred today. From the biggest chunk of our expenditures relating to the actual funding costs for the borrowings that we incur on the project. And for the 2010 year, we actually incurred funding costs of just over 3 billion. We also then earned some income of 849 million, which then just netted off to 2.1 billion for that financial year, showing an accounting deficit for the year of 151 million. So if I can then move on to the budget for the 2011-12 year.
What about the financial statement? Did you get an audit for the qualified statement?
Apologies, Chair. For the 2019 year, we actually got an unqualified audit report, and we have
matters of emphasis or anything?
No matters of emphasis.
Or adding up the better than the water reserve. Add it up, you subtract it, you did it incorrect.
Yes,
yes. All right.
Actually, I don't want to go into too much more detail because we had presented the 09 voting in October. So I would take direction from yourself if you want me to go into further detail on the
budget. You tell me, you always have to tell me that it looks like it's going to be the same again. If there's problems, you must just tell me what they are. But if you think it's going to be the same, you can just say, without going into detail.
Yeah,
so
we,
it looks like it's the same as next year.
Yes, we do anticipate that. The auditors are just finalizing the processes right now.
Oh, that's fine. That's enough detail. More than that, you'd like to find the problem.
So if you look at our budget, the major component that we have in our budget is the capital expenditure. As Johannes mentioned earlier on, lots of work is going to be taking off on our on the newer mandates that we have. So the bulk of our spend for the 11-12 year, as well as the next 2 years after that, is going to be on the CapEx. And then, of course, going hand in hand with that higher CapEx will be higher funding costs, because we would have incremental funding and obviously have a higher spend and higher matching spend then on our funding costs. Our staff complement for the 2011-12 year, we're anticipating to keep at the same level that we have for the 2010-11 year, which is already significantly lower than the board approved organogram. We also are anticipating moving to new principles in the current financial year. At a glance, if we just look at the numbers, the CapEx.
Where is new premises?
Chair, we're currently on a tender, but it is anticipated to be within the same area where we are.
Where are you?
Centurion.
Oh, it's in a smart area. A big rental. Who's your landlord? Read a lot about landlords in the newspapers. right, so you've got your landlords are clean, everything's clean, they're fine. I don't want to hear any problems next year.
Sure. Yeah, so the capital expenditure anticipating for the next 12 years is 2.4 billion. The income is 3.4 income for the 11, 12 year, it's just on the three projects that we completed, which is your LHWP, EWP, and TRECA. And that income on the LHWP is based on the volume that are anticipated that comes out of the Vaal River Union Water Forum, as well as the tariff is approved, as my colleague alluded to earlier on. For both water projects in TRECA, again, the tariffs are per the annual approval, and the volumes that we do are straight out of our water supply agreement. Then we've got what we call our directly controllable expenditure, which are our admin costs, so those are within our control. The indirectly controllable expenditure are, for instance, your royalties costs that we pay to the super government. So everything you expect, it's not our admin costs, not our management costs. It's costs that are there by virtue of the directive that we have. For instance, on the subject would be the royalty cost. It would also be the cost of the Lesotho Highlands Water Commission, that is actually the only body for the Lesotho project on the Lesotho side. And then, of course, the biggest, the big chunk in your finance, close to 2.5 million.
Backing an issue there. You're
definitely
an issue. Well, you get bonuses.
Yes, yes.
All of you.
Chair, we have a kind of point where, in terms of our model, everybody earning scoring a point over three actually qualifies for a bonus on a sliding scale, depending on the performance score.
All of you, or how much percent?
Chair, I think it could probably be around 80%. I couldn't be sure on the actual.
There's another 80% organization who works beyond the call of duty.
That's an amazing organization. 80% of people work more than they should.
How much do you pay in bonus?
For the last financial year, the 2019, we paid $14 million.
$14 million.
How many
people? Karen, about 160. Why haven't you been as effective as the Research Commission and brought that information to us already? Were you asked to bring it? Were you asked to bring it?
I don't think we realized that
we
needed to be brought in that detail.
Okay.
Why didn't you do tell them the same as you told the Water Reserve Commission that information should be here today?
You did. Who did you tell?
It was sent by Linda, and then we also communicated to the secretary, the company secretary.
Chair, apologies.
The point is, does the secretary get a bonus? So what preparation did you now when you anticipated the question? What preparation did you
with
what innovation?
With what innovation? And you can call down the commission.
You guys get 80% if you get foreign. You don't get anything ready to come to foreign. Is that what I expect? You work with billions of rand. Pay 14 million rand. 14 million, I want to emphasize. How many staff do you say?
160.
Is that all your staff? Yeah. But only 80% got it, so less than. So you pay 14 million to less than 160. You come to the year with global arms.
And my work tariff goes up in 30.
Your water tap goes up on
30%. Okay, so we'll have it by lunchtime, okay? One of you can go and get it along at lunchtime. Okay, go on. If you hit that away from me, go on with it at a glance. Let me see what other glances you're going to give me.
We don't get bonuses if we when we sit for the whole day because the committee buys lunch for us. So please have the lunch and come back as soon as possible. Do you need more than 15 minutes? Need more than 15 minutes? Half an hour. Yeah, so according to that, we can finish early, okay? We'll ask questions immediately when we come back, and then code word. You're next. I see you've given us no documents, so you have something. Okay, lunch. Don't think of your questions. Think of difficult questions for these chats. More than just the bonus.
So we need to start doing it together.